Good afternoon, Wahoos and ACC fans. This is Frank with my co-host, Hobbo, and we've got a crowded studio tonight. We've got Vern Inge joining us to my right, and to farther to my right is Chris Sill. So we've got a packed house here tonight, and Jesse's wondering how to keep all these mics working.
And it has multiple meanings, but I'm to your extreme right.
You... Which is hard to believe, actually.
Well, you know, I'd make sure nobody's to the right of me.
Other than the fact that all you need is steak and potatoes only, and occasionally green beans.
I have some key questions for you tonight, but open the show, would you?
All right, let's get going. Well, anyhow, we're all glad to be here, and Wahoo fans are coming off a rather peculiar loss to the seemingly unimpressive Pitt Panthers.
Peculiar. That's an interesting way to describe
it. That was
it.
The best word I could come up with, because they were underwhelming in every capacity except for two or three passes. Other than that...
On offense. The defense was impressive.
Yeah. I'm not sure. We're going to get into that. Tonight, we're going to evaluate UVA's loss and the struggles of the offense. Coach London today, in his press conference and in his phone call last night, promises changes to the O-line and possibly the wide receivers and maybe even the punt returner, Dominique Terrell. UVA must build on the defense's fine play, and I thought at times on Saturday it was extraordinary. The pressure that they put on the other team's quarterback was unbelievable. They eliminated Pitt's run game, and except for a couple of punt return gaffes and a couple of high snaps, dropped snaps, Virginia could have still won the game potentially 3-0, which, ugly, it would have been a win. Anyhow, UVA's got to build on that. The Wahoo football team needs to rebound quickly, because suddenly, all of a sudden, this game on Saturday against Ball State is a crucial must-win home game. We're glad that you've joined us.
And Ball State, as we'll probably discuss at some point in time tonight, is a lot better than people may realize. But anyway, as Frank mentioned, Vern Inge of LeClaire Ryan is in studio. We'll be discussing a number of issues with him as the evening develops. Chris Wright will be joining us shortly. Of course, Chris is the editor of the Saber, so we'll be talking about the football game, both past and upcoming. Later in the show, Dr. Gordy Rawls of Ortho Virginia will give us information on the injury report. And next week, we've got former star running back and well-known to Cavalier fans, David Sloan, will join us, as well as Dr. Jody Smith. Of course, next week's show, 6 o'clock, as always. So here are my questions. You know, I always say stats are for losers. Mm-hmm. Virginia gave up 8 yards rushing. Now, how do you give up 8 yards rushing and lose? And my other question is...
Plus they had 2 interceptions.
They had 3 turnovers or something.
A slew of sacks and a fumble recovery. And the turnovers occurred on the other side of the 50 with a short field. And little did we know it, but Ian Fry, Virginia's field goal kicker, got hurt essentially on the... apparently on the opening kickoff. Came to the sideline and complained about a hip flexor. He said he couldn't make his normal 40 to 45-yard kick. And I kept wondering during the game why they were going for it on 4th and 4. And now we know, because some of those could have been field goals. And so the final drive late in the game, instead of trying to get back in the game, that final drive could have been for the win, because Fry is pretty reliable within 40 yards. So that's why I say peculiar. There were things going on that there was no way to get that information.
But they basically had 3 weeks to get ready for that game.
I know.
You had an off week, VMI in the minds of many is an off week, and then the week to get ready for. So 3 weeks to prepare, and that's the offense we get?
Well, it's complicated. I thought the offensive line play was a big concern coming into the season. The loss of Sean Cascarano at right guard has essentially caused a bunch of dominoes to fall. Connor Davis has not fully recovered from his surgeries this summer. We were led to believe he would be healthy. Connor Davis played a deep run, big, strong, strapping kid. Virginia needed his solid play at right guard, because a right-handed quarterback has got to be able to see the right side of the field. And when the right guard does not block his man, a quarterback will panic. And unfortunately, number 97 was coming right through that hole almost the entire game, and it was brutal. I, poor Cody Wallace just was overmatched. and subsequently during the game lost his position. And judging by the new depth chart, it looks like they've moved him to back up at left guard. And right guard, they've moved the right tackle, Jay Whitmire, in there at 6'6", 300, because they're going to protect David Watford. And now they're going to start a true freshman in Eric Smith at right tackle. And what this means is they've gone with some size and some agility and some shifting and all of it. And I will tell you, Jackson Mateo may be finally healed up to come back to play center, because Ross Burbank had his troubles. One of his snaps was a good 5 feet over Watford's head that led to a deep loss early in the set of downs and put Virginia in a hole. And, you know, when you're a quarterback, you've got enough issues than have to worry about whether the snap is going to be 5 feet over your head. So,
well, the snap is to football what the inbounds play is to basketball.
Correct. I agree with that.
You would like to take that for granted.
And
there have been times in Virginia basketball in the last 10 to 15 years where you couldn't take that inbounds play for granted, you know. But
particularly in the ACC tournament a few years ago.
It's an adventure. But at any rate, big game this Saturday, and they're going to have to get their act together quickly.
No doubt. You know, Pittsburgh had a fifth-year journeyman quarterback, this kid Savage, and with a lot of good pressure, he came unglued. And I think Tenuta's defense is working beautifully, and that's a new scheme. And I think London's frustration today in the teleconference with reporters, he's frustrated because he thinks that the offense should be making strides and improvements. And he has challenged the wide receivers. If they don't start catching the football in practice this week, they're going to replace some people. All right, we have got the editor of the Saber, our longtime media partner and sponsor, Chris Wright, on the horn. Chris, very interesting teleconference today with Coach London. What were your takeaways?
Well, obviously the depth chart stuff that you're talking about, and the lead-in there is the biggest news of the day. Guys getting shuffled around, or a whole lot of that famous or used on the offensive side of the ball. So-and-so or so-and-so. So that's definitely the biggest news of the day, particularly offensive line and wide receiver, where, frankly, a lot of the issues have been happening so far early this season.
You know, not really sure what's going on with Swanson. People have said that they've seen him in a brace on his knee. And Coach London referred to the fact that he did not have Swanson blocking at the end of the line to help give Watford time to get around the edge. Talk about that a little bit.
It certainly seemed to impact the offense on Saturday up at Pitt. They've been using Swanson as a tight end, H-back. Sometimes he's lined up in a fullback kind of spot still. But the gist there is they're using him as an extra blocker on the edge. And usually that's been on the right side where a lot of the problems have been occurring in terms of consistency. So not having him there, you shift either Jake McGee or Rob Burns into that role at Pitt, neither of whom is as good at blocking as Swanson is currently. So I think it caused some of the issues. It certainly wasn't the only issue. There were a long list of them at Pitt, but that certainly was one of the problems, not having him available.
Another thing that has been brought to mind is Jeremiah Mathis, I believe, would have been a senior tight end this year, but he left the team, and that was the type of guy who was big and strong that they needed on the end of the line. But that still doesn't explain the numerous Ole blocks by Cody Wallace and some of the other guys on the inside and Burbank. They couldn't keep the defensive tackles out of the backfield.
Well, that's certainly a strength of Pittsburgh. We knew Aaron Donald coming in was going to be a handful. His numbers last year were impressive. He's looked pretty good so far this year. It was Pitt's linebackers that were having some issues, but Virginia never really got the running game to the linebacker level. So he caused all kinds of trouble in the middle there. You were talking about Ross Burbank as you came in there. Mateo actually played the majority of the game at center Saturday already, so yeah. I would expect him to start this coming Saturday. Burbank, as you mentioned, had that high snap, but on Watford's fumble, it was on a low snap. It yep. got back there, but it was down around his shin. So after he did those two things back-to-back, we pretty much saw Mateo the rest of the way. We did see Burbank at right guard for a little bit in relief of Cody Wallace, but that right guard position is really where the crux of the issues are happening. right tackle some. Whitmire hasn't been great over there, but, you know, from that center spot over has been a recurring problem. And Eric Tetlow, honestly, the freshman from Richmond, I thought looked the best at right guard on Saturday at Pitt. He wasn't in there for a real long time. It was the other guys first, but he's now second on the depth chart behind Whitmire, who they moved over to right guard. But I would not be surprised at all to see Tetlow get the majority of the snaps there if Whitmire has any trouble at all.
Hey, Chris, this is Hobbo, and I got Chris Sill standing to my left. He's excited you're saying nice things about a Godwin High School grad, since Chris is a Godwinite.
Go Eagles!
Does Virginia have to...
a Franklin County Eagle, so all about
the Eagles. It's all about Eagles here. But anyway, it just seems like beyond receivers dropping passes, Virginia's passing game hasn't been that effective. Is that also attributable back to the offensive line?
It's all a really big circle, isn't it? I mean, the Wofford hasn't been overly accurate. The receivers haven't been overly consistent. And the offensive line has been having issues with run blocking in particular, but also with pass blocking. So I think it all goes in a big circle. You know, if Wofford was a little more accurate, could that solve some of the problems? Absolutely. If the receivers would hold on to the ball, or better yet, actually make a play for Wofford, it would help. You know, yes, they're dropping passes, but if you look at Boyd on the other side Saturday for Savage, he pulled in two or three balls that really weren't all that catchable, frankly. And Virginia's receivers never do that other than Jake McGee. So they need somebody to make some plays for Wofford on some of those inaccurate throws. It will make him look better. And obviously, he needs to be more accurate, but sometimes you've got to make a play for your quarterback.
All right, two things. Number one, the read option. Virginia ran a version of it Saturday, and I think that the radio broadcast team for Virginia, Tony Covington, kept saying that Wofford was misreading the read option, meaning when he should have been handing the ball to Parks, he wasn't, and when he kept it himself, he should have given it to Parks, and other times the vice versa, where, you know, he should have, you know, it seems like Parks got a lot of handoffs, but there didn't seem to be any holes there, and he would get 1 or 2 yards, and then you're in second and long, or you're still in third and long, and, you know, we know Wofford can run. He's got wheels. What was your take on all that?
David Wofford himself has said numerous times, including today, that he still needs to improve on his read option reads, and I think that was true on Saturday at Pitt. Using the read option makes sense. He does have some fairly good mobility. Now, I think it's better in terms of top-end speed than it is with, like, acceleration. Once he gets up to speed, he looks great. Sometimes his acceleration is a little bit slower than some of the quarterbacks that are really successful with the read option. But he's definitely misreading some of those plays. Against Pitt, it was wise to run them more often. I think something like 40%, give or take, of Pitt's rushing yards allowed on the season going into Saturday had been to quarterbacks from New Mexico and Duke in particular. So it made sense to try to run some of those, but Wofford's got to get better at reading the correct stuff. He is letting the ball go with the running back more often than he should. And I think, you know, opposing defensive coordinators know that and are probably telling their edge defender to just crash down on the running back and not worry about Wofford until he proves that he can make that read consistently.
You know, one thing I was shocked at today is almost as an afterthought near the end of the teleconference, did London address the punt return situation. I'm not sure I've ever watched a game where the punt returner misjudged, mishandled, mismanaged, and even muffed as much as Dominique Terrell, and it went back to last year. He struggled last year. Why is Dominique Terrell still listed as the number one punt returner going into this next game?
Yeah, I wish I had a good answer for you. I really don't. You know, Coach London did say when asked today, finally, that that was competition was still open, but it does not have an or on the depth chart. My guess is because Khalid Shepherd may not be fully healthy there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the guy that returned punts last year. But
right,
bottom line here is Dominique Terrell makes a lot of bad decisions as a punt returner. So they need to figure out something there, even if it's just stick somebody back there that can fair catch it or get the heck out of the way.
Hey, Chris, one last question before we let you go. Let's end on a positive note. The defense played really well. How about a comment about the defensive effort?
Yeah, that side of the ball has been really impressive so far this year. Obviously, Oregon does what Oregon does to everybody, but if you look at the other games, the defense has been dictating to the offense. And really that's what Tenuta is about. He's not necessarily about blitzing 100% of the time. He's about pressuring and mixing things up to put the pressure on you to react. So far they've been doing that. They've been causing the offense to react to them instead of the other way around. And you see what a dominant defense can do. Pittsburgh couldn't do anything other than the two gift turnovers inside the 20. So that defense is going to keep them in games. The question is, will they be able to capitalize on that by improving the offense even just a little bit? 15 points doesn't sound all that daunting, but you know they couldn't even get to that on Saturday. But the defense is definitely keeping them in games.
Well, Chris, excellent analysis as always, and we look forward to bringing you back here in the next week or two. You have a great weekend, and hopefully Wahoos will get healthy this week, literally, and then also hopefully play better football against Ball State. All right,
they're gonna beat Ball State.
Okay.
That's my call.
Listen, I'm all in favor. All right, we're going to let Chris go, and when we come back here in a few minutes, we're going to have Vern Inge giving us his take on the NCAA and a variety of issues that are out there. And stay with us. This is Who's Talking.